In Somehow, Thoughts on Love, best-selling author Anne Lamott explores the transformative power that love has in our lives, how it surprises us, forces us to confront uncomfortable truths, reminds us of our humanity, and guides us forward. We are, Lamott says, creatures of love. In her 20th book, Lamott draws from her own life and experience to delineate the intimate and elemental ways that love buttresses us in the face of despair as it galvanizes us to believe that tomorrow will be better than today. The book will be released on Tuesday, April 9th, and the publication will be celebrated that night in an Oblong Books and Bardavon event at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, featuring Anne Lamott in conversation with Elizabeth Lesser. Anne Lamott is the author of many New York Times bestsellers, including Dusk, Night, Dawn, Almost Everything, Hallelujah Anyway, Small Victories, Grace Eventually, and Traveling Mercies, as well as several novels. Elizabeth Lesser is the co-founder and senior advisor of Omega Institute, the largest adult education center in the U.S., focusing on health, wellness, spirituality, and creativity. It is a great pleasure to welcome Anne Lamott and Elizabeth Lesser to the roundtable this morning. How are you both?
Well, I'm really well. I love being on your show, and I love getting to spend 20 minutes with Elizabeth Lesser in this kind of sneaky podcasty way.
It's just an excuse. It's just an excuse for us to be together and with you, Joe. Thank you for having us on.
It's a great pleasure. It seems like your work would often intersect, the two of you. How did you first come to meet each other?
Well, we have a mutual friend named Janine Roth, the great writer on food and women. Her most famous book is Women, Food, and God. And we helped launch the book. It must have been 10 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. And then we just wanted to stay in touch. We did sort of a Zoom thing, and then we stayed in touch. Her son lives not far from me and went to the same school as my husband. And so one thing led to another, and she has ended up at my house frequently. And we just love to be together. Yeah.
But true also to my statement, right, Elizabeth, that your work intersects a lot, doesn't it?
Well, a while ago, I don't know, 20 years more, Anne has spoken at Omega and in New York City at some of our conferences. Our work does intersect. You know, I've written books that have similar themes as Anne's. And yeah, I would say we both are spiritually based, but realists.
Yeah. And I would say our themes are our spirit and healing and awakening and living life fully instead of in these small boxes of who we think we're supposed to be. And yeah, we've both written and talked so much about love in all of its different dimensions, you know, family love, which can be kind of tough or fraught, let's say, and the love of community, which we're both very, very based in, and the hardest thing of all, the love of self and the forgiveness of self here at Forgiveness School, aka the human life.
Yeah, the other day we were talking on the phone. Me and Annie were on the phone. And my husband's recently had an accident, and then he had a blood clot in his lung because his leg was immobilized and all these. It's like been living in the Book of Job or something here at my house. And Annie said, oh, she made all the appropriate clucking love noises. And then she said, are you getting help? And I said, it just popped out of my mouth, I don't like help. And I realized after I said that to you, Annie, it's like the opposite of so many of your books, especially this new one. And one of the themes I got the most out of this new book, this is a beautiful new book, people. Like, if you love Anne's work, you're going to feel this is the best one yet. It's so wonderful. I love it. But one of the themes is, it's hard to give love and to be loving, but it's even harder to receive it. And I realized when I said that to you, Annie, I don't like help. I was saying, why are us humans so why don't we think we deserve help and love?
What is it about that, and do you think that so often we don't want help and maybe we don't think of it as love, but that's what it is?
Yeah. Well, I think it's partly because we're so good at being the helpers, you know, and that especially for women, our identity from childhood was about being helpers and helper bees. And so, you know, there's a whole chapter in Somehow based on that beautiful line of William Blake's that we are here to learn to endure the beams of love, which really helps me because it means it's not easy and I'm not just bad at it. You know, but to receive love is to admit that you need love and you need help, and that might make you feel vulnerable and soft, whereas everything in our upbringings and everything in the culture is about covering up how soft and vulnerable you are. So it's kind of a radical thing to agree to be to have your heart open and to be able to just say to someone, thank you for stepping in and offering a listening ear and a cup of tea and, you know, their time.
When you started this idea and exploring love, it's such a vast term, right? I mean, it's
yeah.
a word that means so many things to so many people. We can have a love for each other. We can fall in love. We can have a love of life. We can love things superficially. We can love things very deeply. So this really, the book, and I agree with Elizabeth's assessment, it is so beautiful and special, as most of your, all of your work is, but to look at it and say how you define love in such a broad way.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying, I think, that love is the most overused word in the lexicon, and that we do love each other. We love our families. We love our, et cetera, our community. But we also, people, oh, I love those onion rings at M&G, and oh, I love dancing. But so in this book, this love book, I wanted to write down every single thing I knew for sure that was true, that had worked before during really hard times. Because I wanted to leave it for my son and grandson for when I'm gone, kind of an owner's manual, like operating instructions was, or bird by bird was. But everything I started writing about that I thought, that I know has always worked before, and that I know will work no matter what their futures are, everything had to do ultimately with love, with all the loves that we've talked about so far. And so I just started telling stories and doing the deep dive into why, even for shy and introverted people like me, community is where you're going to find a certain kind of life-saving love, or where, you know, so that I wanted to break love free from its overuse and to say, really, this is all we've got. This is what is going to save us today. And you know, the UN said 4 years ago that we had 12 years to save the planet unless we got very serious, and we forgot to get very serious. And so I think my son's future and both Liz and my grandchildren's futures are going to be hard to even imagine right now, but tough and really warm. And I wanted to write a book that would say, no matter how overwhelmed and scared and weird it all feels, try this and try that and remember this and remember that. And the Susan B. Anthony's granddaughter is a sober therapist. And she said a line that I live by. She said, in these tough times, we remember to remember. We remember how hard life has been before and that we have come through and how we have come through. We think of all the times where we felt absolutely doomed and that there was no way out. And we remember who stepped in and who we stepped in for and how we gathered together and how storytelling saved us and how listening saved us and how, when we don't know what else to do, we pick up litter and we take food over to the food pantry. And so this book is really based on that we remember to remember what has always worked and what surely will again.
Anne Lamott and Elizabeth Lesser are guests on the roundtable this morning. They will be in conversation on April 9th. It is a Tuesday at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie to celebrate the release of Anne Lamott's new book, Somehow, Thoughts on Love. And you can find out more by either going to bardavon.org or oblongbooks.com. Elizabeth, you'll be leading the conversation, and I assume you'll be going into all different directions.
Yeah, I've read the book twice now, and this morning I was looking at it again. It's very hard to underline Anne's books because you end up underlining the whole thing.
Boy, you're right on that.
Yeah, but Anne, I wanted to ask you about the overture, especially.
Yeah.
The overture struck me as different from many of your other pieces. And I've read all your books and I read your Washington Post piece, and you know I love your writing. There's something about the overture that felt almost like it was a piece of music. Maybe that's why you called it overture. I felt like I was in the presence of something that maybe had come to you in a holy moment or something, like the clouds parting in the picture, the Renaissance pictures. Like, did you just do your workmanship, strapping yourself to the chair and working? Or was there something in that overture that came in a different way? It's really a remarkable piece of writing.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Thank you. But nothing comes easily to me, and the clouds never part. And I never, you know, I wrote Bird by Bird because I wanted to tell writing students how I write. And how I write is that I scribble down a bunch of ideas that have come to me. I wanted to write a kind of a short symphony on love. And so I started scribbling down ideas I had and locations that where love has, you know, bloomed or appeared. And I just started scribbling, which is the secret of life. And then I started writing a really god-awful first draft of it. And it was like 1,500 pages. And it was really overwrought and very purple because it was about love. And so I wrote a terrible first draft. And then I thought, you know, I want it to be 2,000 or 3,000 words. I want it to be every single thing that I'm going to talk about in this book, but in a slightly different way. I want to welcome people in. You know, when you write a book, you're asking people to come into this pond with you, and it might be a little bit cold at first. And I wanted people to know that if they came in, we were going to land together on certain lily pads, and that this was kind of a rough presentation of the next 150 pages.
So beautiful. You know, one of the lily pads that you take us on is about aging.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people will love the book, not just because it's about love, but because it's about aging. And not just because you'll be 70, I think the very day we're speaking or the day after. I'm a year older than you. I don't know how old you are, Joe, but
56.
It doesn't, you know, 56 is aging, 25 is aging. Just this process of going through life and what we learn at each stage and doing it gracefully with love. Just for a second about the parts of the book that are about aging.
Well, I think it's really about the wisdom of various realms of our life. Like at 30, you know so much more than you knew at 21 when you probably thought you knew more than you were ever going to know again. And then at 30, both you do know a lot more, but also you know how little you know. And that is the beginning of wisdom. And then, you know, by 40, we've lost people. Everyone I know by 40 has lost someone that they literally couldn't live without. They had an unsurvivable loss. How do you survive an unsurvivable loss? I lost my dad and at 25, and I lost my best friend, my lifelong best friend, at 37. And then by 50, it's all starting to show, you know. It's not that just that you have an inner wisdom, but things are a lot lower and a lot softer than they were. And how do you love yourself when you look in the mirror and you see your mom, or you look at your hands and you see your Aunt Eleanor, and that kind of love that is more challenging when it all just shows? Gravity has had its way. Your metabolism is such a disappointment. And so in that sense, it's about aging, but it's about the wisdom of some of the tribal elders. So many people that I include in this book are within 10 years on either side of me. And it's about It's about the grace of myopia, you know, that I don't see as well and I don't hear as well. And there's grace in that. It means I don't get to fixate and I don't get to get obsessed about the tiny details because I can't see them quite as well or I didn't hear them. But it's also a lot of love stories from much earlier years, you know, being a small child, looking really funny and different and being skinny and having this crazy frizzy hair and getting bullied and where I found love when I was also finding so much rejection of me because the culture rejects girls and women that don't look right, you know, that don't look like the ads and the commercials. So it's really like a lifelong story of where love appeared and how unlovely it appears to us sometimes. You know, it doesn't look like what I had wished for, but it was what ultimately saved my life.
As Elizabeth mentioned in the in talking about the book, it's hard to go through your book and circle and highlight things because it ends up, you know, damn near the whole thing. But I did want to, and this was from the overture, to just read this one paragraph. Maybe love is our very atmosphere, the one energy that Einstein describes as being that which is the only thing there is. This would mean that love is like Wi-Fi, always and already here, if a bit wobbly sometimes, sight unseen, until we look around and begin to notice and use love's atoms and agents, the one-dimensional vibrating strings with which all life is composed. Maybe love is a radio station that we can tune to when we can turn away from the crack cocaine of news and the internet to Bach and sambas and taps to melodious sonnets and the Beatles. That's such a beautiful paragraph.
Oh, thanks, Joe. But I can tell you, I want to tell anyone who's a writer who's listening, that paragraph probably took 24, you know, three or four drafts or more, and hours and hours and hours. So I don't want anyone to think that I think it's easy. It's just kind of torturous. But you stay with it if it feels like it's important to you until you get it right. And I think I got it right. But when you're reading it, I'm thinking, ooh, I might have left that out.
Well, that may have just been my reading.
No.
I do want to bring us, and I don't, I'm not, since I interview a lot of novelists, I'm not usually allowed to talk about the end of the book. But in your case, I can, because you, in your final chapter, I mean, you're talking about driving to church and you just in that overture about the crack cocaine of the news cycle, but you're driving to church on Palm Sunday and it's after another deadly school shooting, and you're about to have Sunday school with 9-year-olds, and you talk to them, and they know what happened.
Right.
And if we all live to be 240 years old, when is that ever going to make any sense?
Mm-mm.
And how do we find love even in those moments?
Well, that was the message of that story, is that we think, you know, I ask the kids, what do you know to do? And they're going like drop, roll, or hide, or fight back. And I go, yes, that's all true. But what you can also do is to remember that you are with each other, and your teacher's going to take care of you, and you're not alone, and you stick together, and you breathe, and you hold hands, and you're going to be okay. And people are coming for you, and just breathe and just keep the faith and remember. And they're like, oh yeah, right. We're going to be together. We're going to be holding hands. We're going to be safe, and that people were loved. I always tell my Sunday school kids, you are loved and chosen and safe. All evidence to the contrary, because we're going to come help you. So don't give up hope. Just hold hands and breathe. So, I mean, there should be one rule, and I'm positive both of you agree. The one rule should be that children should never be hurt. But the world has become so dangerous and scary and weird and violent. And this book is a response to that, that somehow different forms of love will step in and hold us up from underneath and surround us somehow with its arms.
I think my favorite story you tell in the book is a friend of yours who's saving a little frog that got into her house, and she's carrying it out in her cupped hands. And you write something like, "This is how love operates, that when we're most afraid and doomed, we bang around in this cupped hands, and all the while we're being held by love, but we're sort of like fighting against it. It's there."
Right.
And to give those children that, just a little bit of that, is so important, because I feel for myself like it's such senses of despair and doom these days, but it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help me. It doesn't help my grandkids I'm around. To be a beacon of love right now feels like a responsibility and a goodness. And you give us direction for that in the book. And I think it's
thank you, a
really big gift.
Thank you. Well, I wrote somewhere else that lighthouses don't go running around the island looking for boats to save. You know, they stand where they are, and they give off light, and they give off safety and direction for lost ships. And I think that's our calling right now, those of us especially who are a little bit older, who are writers, is to be lighthouses, to give off a little light when and where we can. But Joe, I know we're going to have to go in a second, but I just want to say that the Bardavon Theater for me is like a dream come true. It's like almost like Carnegie Hall. And for this scared, funny looking little kid with crazy frizzy hair to end up at the Bardavon on stage with Elizabeth Lesser of the Omega Institute. I mean, that's what grace is. I can't get there from where I was. And that's the definition of grace, that it picks you up where you are and it drops you off somewhere else. That's just so much better.
Well, it's also, you talked about this in your answer to the previous question, but of the title of the book, Somehow. And somehow we will all be in that room together to experience that.